Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Ziegenkopf have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots first! Bobby Hull!
Juneau tried to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brune carries in, rolling in front of them, and in a shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short cut. Here he is again! Scores! Desjardins!
Hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden death scoring NHL breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com. We're bringing you all the on and off ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues with our fantasy reports, including the IR, goalie report, waiver wire recommendations, and of course, line updates. Today is, of course, Friday, December 7th. Another interesting week in hockey and more controversial stuff to talk about, somehow always seeming to be related to Tom Wilson. We'll get to that shortly. We're also going to talk about sell-high players. I mean, we're a third into the season, just past the third mark, and there's almost 40 players that are at a point-per-game pace still this season, which is a pretty high number, even with considering what George has reminded us a number of times throughout this early season, that scoring is way up. That's still pretty notable that to have this many players at a point per game pace this far into the season. Going to ask George if there's any guys that shown out of that. And it doesn't have to be a point per play per game player. It could be somebody who's near that pace or just exceeding expectations very notably. So I'm just going to ask George if any of these guys he's particularly worried about of a notable regression. Therefore, maybe fantasy-wise, selling high might be the thing to consider doing now. So we'll take a look at that shortly. And sort of on the flip side, I'll ask George if there's any, a player or two that jumps out of him who's always consistently been a good producer that hasn't been up to snuff so far this year that he would sort of consider an interesting buy low candidate as well. Of course, we got the fantasy reports, and we'll probably delve in a little bit to that Calgary-Minnesota game, which definitely seemed to have a bit of a shady ending with a couple of controversial hits, an instigator penalty that will receive an automatic one-game suspension at the very least. But either way, let's jump right into things. George, let's start with sort of sell high kind of question, or at least all these players that are doing so well. And one of the reasons why this question sort of jumped to my mind, it's not like I'm surprised, George, that Rantanen is having another good year, especially with the guy who centers his line, who's fairly good too, MacKinnon, I think his name is. Outside of Boston, at least when that Bergeron line is healthy, probably, or at least that might be another interesting debate for a different day, which is the better line. Is one of those two lines the best lines in hockey? But my point, George, is that not that I expected Rantanen not to produce really well, but I sort of was like, oh, yeah, he's leading the league in scoring with 47 points in just 29 games, and that's what sort of drove me to sort of take a look at the points leaders in the NHL. And I hadn't quite realized that it was about 39, 40 players that, again, are at this point-per-game level where, usually it's, at least this deep into the season, about a third of the season, you still have 20, 25 players. Maybe it might be down to 15, sort of in the leaner offensive years of hockey, say like the 90s, in the clutch-and-grab era. Okay, it would probably be like 10 or under 10 at this point. But my point is that there's a lot of players doing really well. And I'm just sort of wondering if the bubble's going to burst on any of these guys, or if you're particularly concerned about it, or if this is the new reality that we're looking at. We're looking at this kind of offensive output, especially in this day and age with all the goalie equipment, which we had talked about earlier in the year, being smaller, and at least that being some of the reason, if not a lot of the reason, why scoring is up. So, George, I think I've talked enough and gone on and on. So what do you think about this question? Is this the new normal that you sort of expect, at least for this season, that there's going to be a lot of players that are producing well offensively? Or, as I said, is there some guys in this top 40, top 50 in scoring that jump out at you and go, hey, fantasy-wise, I think I could do myself a better service by trading this guy because I think he might have a dip, than keep him and think he's going to ride it out at this pace all year. So, George, what names, if any, jump out at you as sell high now? George?
Well, when you're trying to figure out the offense going on around the NHL, the question is why? Why is offense up this year? Well, actually, it's been up for five straight years when you look at it. Listen, they reduced the goalies' equipment. That certainly has to have something to do with it. Maybe a major part. Maybe, you know, the complete part. I think we discussed on Monday with Jan about expansion. And I mentioned, there's barely enough defensemen to go around now. There's barely enough goaltenders to go around now. I think that's part of the problem as well. I think offense is ahead of defense. I think there are many more skilled players. I think the NHL has changed. I've remarked several times about how I have a tough time in fantasy drafts trusting a Johnny Gaudreau type because he weighs 160 pounds soaking wet. But it seems to me in this day and age, today's NHL, you could survive at that size. There's not as much hitting going on here. There's not as much clutching and grabbing. It is towards the skaters. Speed, skate, move. So I think that's all a big part of it here. That's why we're seeing more goals. There's more penalties being called. So therefore, more power plays. Once again, more goals. So I think it's all a big part of it here. The goaltending equipment maybe being the biggest reason. Yet maybe the goalies haven't adjusted yet. We've heard them complain, moan, gripe about, oh, I'm going to get hurt. No, I don't want to hear it. You've had it really way too good for way too long, and now it's getting back to reality here. Although, once again, if the goalies did want to have the old goalie equipment back, fine. Then make the nets bigger. Same difference for me. I would have no problem making the nets 6.5 by 4.5. Really, I have never understood why we need these, nice numbers, 6 by 4. Listen, baseball, the pitching mound is 60 feet, 6 inches. In football, the width of the field is 53.25 inches, something silly like that. All right, so there are plenty of things where we don't have these nice round numbers where you have to have it, be 6 by 4. You can easily make the nets bigger, too. But that's going to go for another tangent here. I guess as far as point, you look at guys who have points. You were talking about Rantanen and how he was on pace, I think, for 135 points. That may have come down at the last night's game a little bit, but that's what he was on pace for earlier this week. Do I expect it to come down? Sure. Sure. I don't think he's going to score 135 points this season. I do think he'll surpass 100. You look at Rantanen and McKinnon and Landeskog, that may very well be the best line in hockey. I mean, really, it's hard to argue against it. I know the Bruins can when Bergeron's healthy, but he's not. You have a Dallas Stars, Seguin and Ben, sure. Several other teams have great top lines as well. The Toronto Maple Leafs may have two great lines. But my point is the Avalanche put all their eggs in one basket. They really do. With those three guys on one line, it's a fantastic line. Rather they can score. I guess if you're asking me guys who I might sell on who are up there, I don't know. I kind of believe most of these guys. I'm not selling Braden Point. I do believe McKinnon, McDavid, of course not. Backstrom, he's got a bunch of points. He might be somebody only because he doesn't give you many goals. He's generally trying to set up Ovechkin. I can be talked into that there. Patrick Laine, no. Pastrnak, we know he's great. Skinner. How about Mr. Skinner? He's somebody who I might want to deal, figuring that Buffalo is going to trail off a little bit. I can certainly see you trying to trade Skinner. Atkinson? No, I think Atkinson just had one bad year. Maybe it was the contract he had last year, got hurt, slow start, whatever it might be, I believe. Gaudreau, I already mentioned, I believe. If you're going down lower than that, guys like Hoffman, Meyer on San Jose, okay, sure. These aren't top name players. It could just be a hot start. One thing we do have to remember, we're only 2 months into the season, barely over 2 months into the season. So there's lots of hockey to be played here. While, when I said the term hot start, that's probably not true. We're really past the hot start part. We're not leaps and bounds past it. So it could still be a continuation there. But overall, Scott, I think the goals are going to continue to be scored this season. I do. I don't know if it'll be at the same rate it is right now. I don't know how many more 9-6 games we're going to see, which is Calgary and Columbus the other night. It was fun to watch. I don't know how many more of those types of games we're going to see here, but I think maybe the days of every game being 2-1, 3-2 being an offensive explosion, that may not be here, and I think the NHL is happy about that. I think they want the goal scoring to go up. I think this is all playing into it. So I don't know if I'm going to be too on board to getting rid of, in other words, selling high, because I think most of these guys are legit. You know, I think they're going to continue to score goals here. I'll say it again. For me, all the reasons. Goalie equipment being smaller, goalies haven't adjusted to it, lots of penalties. The league is made for skaters. And I just think forwards are just so much better than, as a whole. Not every defenseman, but as a whole, they're better than defensemen. Most teams, you and I talk about this every time we talk about the trade deadline and what teams need. Everybody needs a defenseman. And generally, it's a top four defender. When I talk about top six, it's a top four defender. Every team needs that. Well, almost every good team has four, five, six, seven top offensive players. So I think, once again, forwards are ahead of defense. And, you know, goaltending, once again, just go to fantasy drafts. Just think about it. You barely have 20 goalies you trust. Well, that means a third of the league has goalies you don't trust, bad goalies. So, therefore, bad goalies are going to let in bad goals, and they're going to let in more goals. So I think all this is the reason why I expect goal scoring to continue.
You know, I think overall that is probably on point, you know, because of all the reasons that you said. So I actually, you know, don't think that there's going to be any major shift here, as you're sort of implying too, George, in terms of people just bottoming out. You know, I mean, you just look at this top part of the scoring columns. You know, Rattan and MacKinnon, even if the kids don't keep up the pace that they're playing, and I tend to agree with you, I don't think they're going to be on 120-plus points, 125-point paces, but I could see them realistically both being around the 95 to 105-point pace, you know, which would obviously be slowing down a little bit, but producing really, really well. You know, Mitch Mariner, maybe he's slightly above pace, but with that, you know, team, especially, you know, now that they got Nylander back even more, just another big offensive weapon. So he's not going to, I don't think he's going to disappear. Kucherov point, you know, the point that you made about Goudreau, you know, I teasingly say to you here, George, you know, I told you so, only because we've sort of been jokingly been on each other about Goudreau and how small he is and whether he could succeed. But I think you're exactly on right. In today's NHL, it's a different landscape than it was, you know, historically speaking. McDavid, Wheeler, Ovechkin, you know, Duchesne would have been a name that popped up. I was going to talk about him later during the IR report. He got injured. He might be out a while. So obviously that's going to be a natural, you know, coming back down to earth, to say the least. But he would have been a name before he got injured. You said Jeff Skinner, and I like Jeff Skinner. George, I have Eichel on mine. And I don't necessarily, and when I say Eichel, I'm not necessarily saying, okay, this is a guy that I'm definitely looking to sell high on. But I'm saying that I do think that there is going to be a regression. He's got 34 points in 29 games. I think he's going to slip under a point per game pace the rest of the way, you know. So, I mean, that's just a matter of what your landscape of your team looks like at that point. Do you think that, you know, you could get a haul for him that's going to maybe fill some holes for you, which would be the only impetus to maybe really even sell any of these guys? I mean, that might be an obvious statement. You know, Lindholm is another guy for Calgary that sort of jumps to mind, but I actually think he's got a good chance of keeping it up, but I can understand why other people might doubt him. So my list of these, looking at the top 40, George, is pretty short. The only additional name, which again, I don't think he's going to disappear, I just think he's going to have a little bit of a regression, would be Max Domi of the Montreal Canadiens. I do feel like the team has been playing a bit above its head, not leaps and bounds above its head, but above its head. And it's the really that Drew and Domain line is really the only consistent scoring line. So over the course of the season, it's hard to see them not having just a natural regression plus other teams sort of keying on them, because your other line, your top six, is the Nault-Gallagher line and you know, with Tatar on it. And I'm sorry, with all due respect to those guys, they just don't scare me. So it's hard to imagine, I mean, other teams not sort of making more and more effort as the season progresses to sort of key on these guys, you know, pushing forward even more of a regression. All right, George, let's look on the flip side of this question. And I'm just looking for a name or two here. I'm not looking for a laundry list, but are there any guys that have been historically pretty consistent producers who have been disappointing this year, who jump out at you as like, okay, this is a guy that if somebody's sort of getting nervous on him, I might sell on him? And I'm not saying this guy should be on your list, but just to give you an example, I got a trade offer last night for Evander Kane, and in the comments, the other owner specifically said, I just included Kane in case you're sick and tired of his plus-minus, you know. So I'm not sort of saying that Kane should be on here, you know, but I'm just sort of giving an example of like, a player who is not maybe hitting the heights that you're used to them hitting, you know, and playing on other owners' fears. So, again, I'm not specifically making a comment on Evander Kane, but it is an example of what I'm thinking of. So, George, any buy low guys that you think are particularly juicy or interesting in your mind, assuming you have a need at that particular position, whatever player it might be? George?
Yeah, there are some names out there. Kane's a good one. He is a good one. Andre Kopitar is a good one. Done, it depends on what you believe. Is he the Kopitar of last year, who had an MVP-type season? Well, Kopitar 2 years ago, where he pretty much disappeared. Right now, it looks like 2 years ago. So he's someone who could be on your list there. Matthew Barzell of the Islanders. You know, and I worried about this. I said this many times. Worried about Tavares leaving. Defense is concentrating on him. All the pressure's on him. Seems to be happening. He's getting his share of assists. Not really lighting the lamp all that much. He's a name, so you might want to keep an eye on here. Taylor Hall, last year's MVP. Now, he has been bad, but hasn't been good either. Got benched by the Devils the other night. I do wonder if that was more of the head coach telling the team, hey, I'll bench anybody, including Hall. That's sort of more than Hall being really the bad person there. But he may be somebody you can target. There are always guys who we're worried about, you know, where you can try and steal because they go through a slow start. They're not playing well. It's how the game's played. Buy low, sell high. That's how you win in fantasy. You know, Voracek on Philadelphia, maybe he's somebody you look at there who hasn't really been the player we thought. Maybe it's one of the injured guys. You know, there's nothing wrong if you have the depth to try and trade some of that that depth to a team that's in injury hell. You know, Arvidsson comes to mind. You know, somebody who needs a player now, maybe you can get Arvidsson for cheaper. You know, 70 cents on the dollar because he's on the IR. And once again, it's the way the game is played. For those who are wondering about Kovalchuk, no, I don't believe. I'm certainly not taking him there. Nikolai Ehlers is somebody I would buy. I think we've seen his breakout. I think you're probably a week too late in trying to buy him. I think you're seeing his breakout now as he's starting to wake up from what was an extremely slow start to the season. So like I said, Scott, there are always guys out there you can find. You know, it's you're just playing the game. Is it a slow start? Is it a slump? Or is it a sign of things to come? Is he breaking out of it? You know, it's always a game. We're always trying to figure out why. Why did he get off to that slow start? Is there an injury we don't know about? Something going on in his personal life? A change of lines? You never really know, but that's how the game's played. Buy low, sell high.
All right, George, thanks for that feedback, both on the sell high and buy low aspect of that question. I think it certainly gives some perspective to our fantasy owners and maybe even inspire them to make some moves trading or looking for guys to get to their team. All right, George, let's move it on to the more controversial subject of the day before we hit into the fantasy reports. And, again, partly just because of Tom Wilson and his name is out there for all the reasons that we know, the controversies, the illegal, the borderline hits and all of that, seemed to get some of his own medicine the other day with Ryan Reeves blindside hitting him. And, sort of there's a certain amount of fallout, you know. There was a question of whether there was enough discipline. He was given a 5-minute major, but he was not suspended. You know, blindside hits are such an issue, especially ones that are, more towards the head, even though this was not a head hit, or at least not his body. His head hit the ice. That looks pretty nasty. But there's an awful lot of talk of karma. Karma comes back and bites Tom Wilson, you know, in the derriere, so to speak. You know, so a lot of people out there didn't really mind, didn't really care how it played out. So I'm wondering if you think there is a Tom Wilson factor here in the fact that Reeves didn't get suspended. You know, if you are looking at this in a vacuum and you take the names of the players out, are you thinking the result is the same here in terms of discipline or non-discipline when it comes to Reeves? And this isn't really specifically a question towards you, but there is another sort of just wrinkle to this story where Vegas merchandising shop, I believe, printed out pictures of Wilson on the ice and Reeves in the foreground just looking at him. And I forget what the quote was, but it was sort of basically like a bit of a karma thing. And Reeves went ahead and signed it. And they went to try and start to sell it. And then almost immediately Reeves said, okay, this wasn't a cool thing to do, asked for them to destroy it. NHL was going to come in here but Reeves sort of, like, I believe, took care of it before the NHL had to come down on it. It was just kind of, like, shady and just doesn't look good. Like I said, to the question that I have for George, I don't know if it really has much or any impact or any importance, but it was sort of another note of the story that I just couldn't resist conveying if you hadn't heard it. So, George, the incident, the hit, like I said, what do you think about how it played out, and do you think the fact that it was Tom Wilson played into the fact that there wasn't any more discipline? And, you know, should there have been? So, George, what do you think about this particular incident?
Well, when you look at the hit, the puck just passes Wilson, who's watching the puck, which he should know better than that. And the hit is, it's shoulder to shoulder. It's not to the head. But it's not. It's probably a hit the NHL would rather not happen. You know, even though I think the hit in some ways is legit. I mean, I don't have the capability what the NHL has. What they'll do is they'll break it down frame by frame. And if a certain amount of frames, if it's after that, let's say it's 8 frames, then they deem it illegal. If it's before that, then they deem it legal. That's within the time. So you have to really be able to see that here. I love watching these things as we talk about, because I watch it over and over again on a loop to see, you know, does anything change my opinion from when I saw it originally. I think this is one of those cases where the NHL is saying, you know, the punishment on the ice by the refs was good enough. You know, I think that's what they're saying here. I think if you wouldn't have gotten thrown out of the game, I think maybe something different would have happened here. Maybe he would have gotten suspended for it. Sort of like Wilson's hit on the Vassini. Same thing. Even though I believe that one should have been suspended. I think that one was dirty. But I think this one was dirty. I think, you know, Reeves is a tough boy. I think he was looking for someone to hit. I mean, he may have even been looking for Wilson to hit. You know, Wilson's also turned down fighting Reeves more than once, which makes you wonder if, well, this is Reeves' way of getting back. Do I feel bad for Wilson? No, because this is the type of player he is. You know, he's a dirty player, does dirty hits, but doesn't drop the gloves unless it's somebody he believes he can beat. He won't drop the gloves against the heavyweights. I think that's part of the problem here. Once again, it's today's NHL as well. Do I think if it wasn't Wilson, would we have seen a suspension? It's tough because, once again, it's not a hit to the head. I think it all comes down to that frame thing. Was it after that time? Keep watching it over and over again, and it looks borderline to me. Every time I think it looks borderline. But I think for me, the determining factor is not a hit to the head. The fact that his helmet goes flying off, well, that's on Wilson. It means you're not wearing your helmet tight enough, right? So that I don't think has anything to do with this. The fact that his head hits the ground, once again, not on Reeves. That's on the player, or just bad luck. You know, once again, you wear your helmet tighter. He's not hitting you in the head, and the helmet comes flying over, and you hit it. Well, you know, it comes down to, once again, is the hit legal or illegal? What happens if it's a legal hit and your head hits the ground? That's not on the hitter. You know, once again, it's not his problem here. So, like I said, I think it's borderline, Scott. I do, which makes it, you know, first thing I thought of as well when I heard about the no suspension was, well, this is the NHL's way of getting even. You know, it's the NHL's way of saying, you know, we didn't suspend you for Cini, so we're not going to suspend Reeves for this hit. You know, but I'll say this once again. I think the hit on the Devils player was much worse. You know, as far as maybe not as hard, maybe not as brutal a hit, because Reeves is a big man. But that one was dirty. I don't think this one was dirty. I think this one's close to a hockey play. You could just make the argument that it's maybe not even a half second late by the interference rules. You know, so if it's late, it's, you know, it's a quarter of a second. It's just barely late here. And by the NHL not suspending him, what they're saying is it wasn't late. That's what the NHL is saying here. Whether or not you believe that or not, well, that's the argument. But that's what they're saying, that the hit wasn't late.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I tend to agree with you. I guess my biggest distaste of this whole situation is really the more of the public's reaction of the, karma, you got what you deserved, you know, with Tom Wilson. And I do understand the sentiment. I mean, I am not, or at least I don't consider myself a Tom Wilson defender, but I do think, you know, a couple of the incidents have been made out to be a little bit worse than they were. I know last year we talked about a couple of incidents where, and I know we're splitting hairs here, where, like, you know, there was some controversial hits where I really thought that he didn't go for the head, where he really sort of got the shoulder, the back of the shoulder kind of situation, you know, but this isn't really a splitting hairs kind of situation. Like I said, I don't appreciate the, you know, I don't think if there's any room in sports or hockey to be like, ha-ha, you got it. You know, but outside of that, I really don't feel like there should be any major, you know, suspension here. To a point that you made earlier, George, I do think and I feel like you can really say it as a sure thing that Reeves was looking for Wilson. They were sparring the entire game, and Reeves himself said that they were going at it the whole game and that he was sort of looking for him every time he was on the ice. So, yes, he was looking for him, but it wasn't sort of a headhunting situation like we saw Lucic, you know, a couple of weeks ago on Matthew Joseph of the Tampa Bay Lightning, where, like, you know, Lucic came off the bench and just sort of followed Joseph around until he could catch up with him and nailed him. I don't think it was that situation. So as far as I'm concerned, like, at the end of the day, it's essentially good enough. All right, folks, let's turn our attention to the fantasy report, starting with the IR and line support in Anaheim. Raquel, ankle injury, did not practice on Thursday, listed as day-to-day. They're going to reevaluate him today, at least as of about a half hour, 45 minutes ago. There's no results of that just yet, and considering the time difference between here and California, that's not exactly a surprise. But they're basically looking to determine whether this is going to be a short-term injury or a long-term injury. Either way, I wouldn't expect Raquel in the lineup this weekend, at the very least, for the next game, but I don't think either game this weekend is realistic to have him. It's really looking towards next week if you're a fantasy owner and have him on your team, whether you're going to be playing next week or not, and whether it's going to be multiple weeks or not. If Raquel does not play, it looks like Sprong, the recently acquired forward for the Pittsburgh Penguins, will get another chance on the top line with Getzlaff and Aberg. Last game, he had started on the second line with Henrik and Richie, moving Kase down to the fourth line. So I do think Sprong goes up to the top line as he ended the game, their last game there, and Kase moves back up to the second line is what I anticipate having. We don't have confirmation on that, but that is what I expect to happen. In also for the Anaheim Ducks, in the market for a left-handed defenseman. Now, it looks like they're looking for a top four guy, but if they can't find one, then they'd be satisfied with a third pair guy. But they are definitely in the market looking to make something happen. A little bit early in the year for anything notable. I mean, we have seen some trades, but generally speaking, as George and I, you know, they point out, it seems like every year, any trades that happen before Christmas tend to be minor trades. So unless Anaheim decides to wait until after New Year, I don't expect any significant trade here, but they are looking for a left-handed defenseman. In Arizona, Hinze Stroza with a lower body injury listed as day-to-day. He's also going to be reevaluated today. Finally, some good news in Boston, and I think George is well aware of this because he picked him up yesterday in our hockey league. McAvoy, by the way, what the hell was he doing on a free agent wire in our hockey league? I understand he was injured, but my God. Well, and how did I miss that? I needed a defenseman a couple of weeks ago. Anyway, McAvoy was activated and did play last night for them. Cave looks like he's Colby Cave, that is. Looks like he's starting to settle in a little bit more on that top line, a couple of points in the last three games. But he's also sort of been splitting time with Krejci in between Pasternak and Marchand, so he's not sort of fully ingrained in there either. In Buffalo, Palmville, with an undisclosed injury that caused him this couple of games, is being reinserted into the lineup, playing on the second line with Palmville and Sheary. Sheary moving up from the third line to the second line. He'd been playing about a half a dozen games on that third line since returning to the lineup himself before returning now to the top six. In Carolina, Jordan Staal, a concussion, listed day-to-day. We don't know, and again, it's a concussion. So there's always that sort of big question mark. And there's never such a thing as a minor concussion. But to my point, there's really no sense, at least in terms of what Carolina's admitting at this point, whether this is expected to be a little bit shorter term or whether this is going to be an indefinite thing where it could be a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Either way, Jordan Staal out of the lineup should move Aho back to center, at least temporarily, with Teravainen. So it's just a matter of who's going to play that wing with those two in all likelihood. Furland, with his concussion, was moved to the IR. It was done retroactively, so they had to make a couple of moves because of the Jordan Staal injury and having Furland out. So this really could be not necessarily a red flag with Furlan, like, oh, no, he's going to be out another couple of weeks. It could just be like, okay, he's going to be out another two or three games, and we just need a player for a game or two, so we're doing this retroactively. So I guess what I'm saying, if you're a Furlan owner, especially, you know, particularly for those deeper leagues, don't panic just yet that, oh, no, this is going to be a long-term injury issue for him. In Chicago, things really not going very well. You know, they are like 3-10-2, I believe, since Quenneville has since Quenneville was fired. And keep in mind, with Quenneville, they were 6-6-2. So it's not like, you know, he was, you know, obviously setting the world on fire. Really makes you wonder whether this is the right move or not. Perlini has no points, only 3 shots on goal, -6, and a .38 Corsi since being traded from Arizona. Cannot imagine him sticking on that top line with Taze and Sade much longer. Strome and DeBrincat moved down to third line, getting third line minutes last game, playing with Fortin, and Hayden and Anisimov are playing with Patrick Kane. So, George, this is one question I will sort of want to follow up on you with. From a fantasy hockey perspective, to the points that I just made, that this team has now lost 5 in a row, 3-10-1 or 3-10-2 under the new coach, it seems like it's kind of starting to go to hell in a handbasket. Not quite the tire fire that we were talking about, what we expected from Montreal and Ottawa before the season started, and obviously those two situations aren't tire fires. But Chicago looks like it has the potential, if it keeps sliding down towards the negative, to become a tire fire. If you have a Jonathan Toews, who at least started the season looking like he was resurgent offensively, but more important, a Patrick Kane, are you looking to move these guys, or are you confident enough that, okay, the team might be going to hell in a handbasket, but these guys are too good and they're still going to put up their points? So outside of plus and minus, I'm still confident they're going to do just fine. I'm not panicking. I'm not looking to move them. So what's your feeling when it comes to those guys, especially in a, you know, those like star players on a team that's just bad and expected to be bad and not be so good the rest of the year? Are you looking to cut those guys loose, or are you taking a step back, taking a deep breath and saying, okay, like I just pointed out a moment ago, outside of plus and minus, you're still confident they're going to put up their numbers? So, George, are you looking to sell these players, or are you looking to just stand pat and everything will be good enough? If you are fantasy owners of Patrick Kane in particular, but to a lesser extent, Jonathan Toews. George?
Well, as always, anyone is tradable depending on the price. You know, that's just the way it is. You could have Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid. They're tradable depending on what the package is coming back here. So anybody's movable. As for these two in particular, I mean, if you were going to trade Toews, that probably should have been done a month ago when he got up to the hot start. He's playing better again now, but cooled off for a while here. But as we always say, center is deep. You can get him, centers out there, and Toews hasn't been a good fantasy player in forever. So I don't know what your realistic expectation is. Kane would be the definition of more, I wouldn't say buy low, because he hasn't been bad. He just hasn't been Kane-like. The MVP was a couple of seasons back. I'd probably be wanting to buy Kane more than sell him, because if you sell him, I don't think you're going to get equal value back. I think, you're sort of selling low. And this would be a buy-high opportunity here. So I think you're sort of stuck with Kane. I have to hope he plays better. Do I think this team is in deep doo-doo? Yeah, I do. Yeah, I said this when we discussed the coaching change here. This is how they treated Quenneville when they pretty much put in one of Bowman's aides as his assistant coach so they could spy on Quenneville and everybody knew it. That pretty much tells you all you need to know. You don't think the players knew this? You know, Quenneville is Hall of Fame coach. Lots of respect. He was pretty much, you know, stomped on him. So I think it's been handled really poorly here. So I think that does filter down to the players as well. So I think this team is a tire fire. And I think it's going to be a bad team. I don't see them snapping out of it this year. They'll try. They'll do everything they can to try, because once again, as I like to say, you're not going to fire 20 players. You did fire the coach. Guess who gets fired next? That's the general manager. Now that's going to be this year. Maybe it's next year, 2 years down the line, but that's where it goes to next. You know, maybe he's the problem, which in this case, I think, yes, he is. So I think that's going to be an issue there. Maybe Panarin signs there in the offseason and their problems are solved. But I think that's where we're at with that. Jonathan Toews, probably a little too late there as far as selling him. Patrick Kane, I'd rather buy than sell, because I just don't think you're going to be able to get him for a good price.
Oh, sort of some savvy advice there, switching it around on a Patrick Kane. Because George, again, unless his plus-minus becomes, like, abysmally bad, like you're talking about, like, a -20, -25, which, with the way things are going, is not completely out of the realm of possibility. You know, I obviously this team is flawed, but he's still putting up his numbers. and just sort of like, you know, the perspective, how it feels with that team playing so bad and everything sort of falling, going to hell in a basket kind of feeling in terms of purchasing him, you know, a nervous owner could sort of discount the price a little bit because the team around him is so bad that their worry is going to negatively affect him. So that could be some savvy advice in trying to acquire him rather than trying to get rid of him. All right, returning to the IR and Lodge report, the one maybe slightly good news, and I do mean slightly, for the Chicago Blackhawks, Connor Murphy with that back injury that's caused him this the whole season so far, on the precipice of returning. And that's only really significant because of how much need Chicago has on the back end rather than Murphy himself coming in to be a savior, because he's not going to be a savior, but he is a competent top four guy for a team that desperately needs some defense. So that's one sign of good news. In Dallas, Hanzel has been activated and expected to make his season debut tonight, coming back from his spinal fusion surgery over the summer. And with him returning to the lineup, that bumps Radulov back up to the top line with Skinn and Jamie Benn. Spezza playing right wing with Hanzel centering the second line and Devon Shore as the left wing. And this is sort of an intriguing situation to me when it comes to the Dallas Stars and Hanzel coming back. I mentioned it a show or two ago to keep an eye out for Hanzel's return and the fact that I've never been that big on the Hanzel bandwagon. I would absolutely love to have him as my third line center, good two-way defensive forward who can provide some offense, but I've never really thought of him as a reliable offensive producer, even when he put up some decent points in Arizona, simply because he was the number one guy. He just got the most ice time there. Spezza on the wing. Now, one of the things they said that was the issue with Spezza and playing the wing last year is that Hitchcock kept jerking him around all around the lineup, back to center, back to the wing, and he never had a chance to get comfortable. So if they're going to do this, keep Spezza on the wing, and just for the next 2 months, no matter how he does, just keep him there. And it'll be interesting to see how he does. Hanzel, if he's not producing offensively, if we're a month from now he's not producing offensively, that creates a bit of a conundrum. Centers that really need to be centers and don't play effectively on the wing. And you can say that's historically with Spezza, even if you're dismissing last year for the reasons I just said. But Foxa, you know, is really needs to be a center. Hanzel needs to be center. Spezza is really best at center. You know, so which one of those guys are going to bump down to the fourth line? Which one is going to be your defensive third line center? Basically, what I'm bringing up here is that the whole situation makes me nervous because I am not confident in Hanzel in particular. But if Spezza can find his offense on the wing, and I like what I've seen in glimpses from Shore, it might be intriguing. So certainly, like I said, a situation that bears keeping your eye on in Dallas. Also for the Stars, Klingberg with a hand injury is progressing nicely, a little bit ahead schedule, and there is a chance he could be back before Christmas break. In Detroit, nothing really too exciting to mention here, other than the fact that I couldn't, I just noticed that Zanuck back up into the top six for the first time playing with Nelson, and Athiasio did have a point last game. So again, situation just to keep an eye on, especially in deeper leagues if you're desperate for wingers. In Edmonton, Kagula with a hand injury, landed on the IR. Kiara getting an opportunity to play Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Pooja Jarvi on the second line. And I was just also kind of interested, just new coach and you're trying new things. That third line there, they recently claimed Zykov from the Carolina Hurricanes off waivers. They recently traded for Spooner. And then there's Ratty, who Hitchcock had in St. Louis, didn't like him, didn't play him. Those three put together on a third line for Edmonton, just bringing it up just because I'm intrigued to see how it goes, especially since that Edmonton hasn't been playing a lot better since Hitchcock came to coach. They just haven't been really scoring. So this looks like an attempt for Hitchcock to create a little bit more offense. And as a side note, Lucic down to the fourth line for the Oilers as well. Now, George, I kind of want to talk a little bit about that Calgary-Minnesota game, at least the controversial ending, just because there was a lot that was happening. Giordano sort of extended his leg and ended up having essentially a knee-on-knee with Koivu. Koivu left. He's injured. He's listed as day-to-day, Koivu, with that knee injury, or at least what's suspected to be an injury. And Giordano's going to have a hearing with the league over the hit. Possibly partly related to that, or at least I think the Calgary Flames thought it was related to that. A little bit later in the game, Dumba just absolutely laid out Backlund. Backlund had to leave. And because of that, somewhat of a no-name player in Lindberg comes off the Calgary bench and instigates a fight. He gets an automatic one-game suspension, which could become more because the league is also going to be talking to him about that. So it was very close to becoming a cluster you-know-what. Like, just the refs completely losing the game. Guys, really, tempers really starting to flare between these two teams. George, I'm just kind of curious if you saw these couple of incidents that I mentioned and what you thought about it, whether it was a situation where the refs really did let it get out of hand, or is this just sort of emotions running high, but and the Giordano hit and the Dumba hit really weren't that bad. It was just a competitive sort of divisional game kind of situation. Well, it wasn't divisional, but a conference game. So did you see these hits, and what did you think about it? Was Giordano dirty? Was Dumba dirty in those hits that they deserve some discipline and looking at, and maybe even the NHL talking to refs about not letting games get out of hand? Or is this whole thing just getting a little bit overblown? George, what did you think of these situations?
Well, I wasn't watching the game, so I can't really tell you if the refs let it get out of hand. That's generally how that works. A refs letting everything go, and then eventually it's just, as you sort of said, it goes down to a cluster F. And things just get, the players are just, the inmates are running the asylum. That's really what happens there. But like I said, I was not watching the game, so I don't know if that's truly what happened there. As far as the Dumba hit, that I did see. I thought that was a good hockey hit. I didn't have any issues with it. In today's hockey, you hit anybody, there's going to be a fight. All right, that's just the way it is. Whether you're a good hit or not, that's just the way it's going to be. Whether or not you agree with it, I don't. And you'd like to see the players realize that, you know, hitting is a part of hockey. There's nothing wrong with a good, clean hit. And I thought Dumba's hit was good, clean. He may have left his feet. That might be the one issue you have with that hit. But other than that, it was pretty clean to me. Could I see him get fined? I don't think he'll get suspended for the hit. I don't think. Yeah, but then again, you never know with the NHL. But I really didn't have an issue with the hit. As for the Koivu one, that does look like a knee on knee. That's a dirty play. Yeah, that's what it looks like to me. And Giordano's had problems before. So you wonder if this is going to be a problem for him here. I would think it would be. But once again, I never know what the NHL is going to do here. But that one did look dirty. You know, it's knee on knee. You know, so I think I have much more of a problem with that one than I did with the Dumba hit.
I think that's a pretty fair breakdown of both situations for the most part. I certainly, myself, I don't think that the Dumba hit was dirty either, although I will confirm that it did look like he left his feet a little bit, so that does make it a little bit shady. But overall, I didn't think that the hit was bad. Now, the Giordano hit, I'm a little bit on the fence about, because I totally see and understand why you would say that's a dirty hit, and he does have a little bit of a history in the past of this kind of thing happening. I guess I would sort of need to sit in that league office and watch that hit over and over again. I did watch it a bunch of times before the show. I guess that's the one thing that sort of makes it a little bit of mitigating circumstances for me is that Giordano, when he extended his leg, he was approaching the boards. And the motion that he made with his leg and sticking his legs out there, to me, looked just as much as I'm trying to slow down and not slam into the boards myself, putting my leg out to slow myself down, as I was to, you know, try and stick my leg out and trip up this player. Now, having said that, I think what plays into here is what you had just said, the fact that there is a little bit of a history there. I don't consider Giordano like a dirty, dirty player, but he has had some incidents in the past, you know. And we've also seen plenty of times where players just sort of let themselves, especially if it's just your thigh, the side of your thigh, you know, slamming into the boards to slow yourself down rather than down. So it's shady enough that, George, if he got a one-game suspension, a two-game suspension, I certainly wouldn't argue it. It's not a hill that I would die on. But I think that there is a little bit of open question here. But after the two hits, listen, I'm not condoning Lundberg at all. I think he should have gotten suspended. I think he should probably have an extra game suspended. But I sort of, between after the Koivu hit, and then maybe, you know, you're a little upset about that, and then you get the hit on Backstrom, I can understand why tensions might sort of run high a little bit on that, Calgary bench. Again, not defending you know, what Lombard did or how the team was necessarily feeling. But I understand that in a competitive moment, how you sort of emotions might run high. But not that I'm saying it's a whole lot of nothing here, but it definitely seems like there's a lot of fervor about it more than actual substance there, at least to me. All right, moving on to the Montreal Canadiens. Yulson, their young defenseman, coming back from his facial injury. Looks like he's going to be returning on Sunday, so getting even more back to full strength for a team that's been surprisingly good, or at least from what we considered, and getting some reinforcements. You recently got Weber back. You're getting Yulson back. Only good things for Montreal right now. In Nashville, we talked on a Monday show about the lines. Hartman, Johansson, and Fiala, your top line. Tolvanen, Yarncock, and Craig Smith, your second line there. A little bit of good news, or at least some veiled good news, as GM Poole said that when we get home next week, you know, and they're finishing up a road trip this weekend, we think we might get a player or two back. There is no confirmation on that or what specific player he's talking about, but it is believed that PK Subban is the guy that would be most likely to return from his upper body injury, just because Arvidsson, Turris, and obviously the most recently injured, Forsberg, all expected to be out weeks, if not a little bit longer than that, more so. And we haven't heard anything about any of those guys being way ahead of schedule. So it doesn't seem like Subban would be the guy to come back and give them some reinforcements there. So some potential good news on the horizon for the Nashville Predators. For the New York Rangers, not really a whole lot to talk about, but there are some injury issues there. And Nemestikov with a concussion, missed the last three games. Looks like he will be returning for the next game for the New York Rangers, practicing full for the Rangers today in practice. Same thing with Zuccarello and his groin injury that's caused him to miss the last 10 of the last 12 games. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's another game, maybe two, before he returns to the ice. And Buchnevich with that thumb injury, practicing as well. Looks like he's about a week away from returning for the blue shirts as well. In Ottawa, and I teased this at the top of the show, we were talking about top scorers, some injury news. Duchesne with a lower body injury, and it was quoted by Boucher as saying he may be out a while. And the same thing with Bobby Ryan and his upper body injury. Both are going to be reevaluated today. Actually, well, they specifically said in the next couple of days. But there is a strong fear that both of these guys are going to be out long-term. And when I say long-term, I'm not necessarily saying 3 months, although we don't know yet, but I'm definitely looking at probably at least a minimum of 3 to 4 weeks, if not multiple months for both, based on the whispers. And I stress that, based on the whispers that have been coming out of Ottawa. Also for the Senators, Lahoy with that undisclosed injury listed as day-to-day, missed last three games, and does seem questionable for this weekend's games, although it doesn't seem like that's going to be long-term for them. In Pittsburgh, Dominic Simon with that lower body injury, going to bump him off that top line and lands him on the IR. Russ Tits, the first opportunity to play with Crosby and Gunsell with Simon out. And I just sort of want to mention to keep an eye on, and again, I'm not telling fantasy owners, especially when it comes to center, considering how deep center is, to run out and pick him up. But could Kessel Broussard finally be starting to find some chemistry? Last three games, they've been together. It's really been a little bit more than three games, but Kessel has been moved around a little bit. But in the last four games, he's been playing a lot, Kessel and Broussard together. And Broussard does have 2 points in the last three games playing with Kessel, only 6% owned. So this is a guy you should definitely put on your watch list, because if they keep Kessel with him together and Broussard sort of blooms because of it, it could be a good fantasy pickup for you as well. In San Jose, Meyer did return from his injury. Didn't go back on the same line as it was before with Couturier and Hurdle, but he was put with Thornton and Sorensen, not exactly a bad place to be, as they keep the Couture, Hurdle, Pavelski line together, as well as the Kane, Samolia, and Donskoy line together as well. In St. Louis, changing up the lines a little bit, as Tarasenko now moved to play with Shen and Steen, although Steen is a game-time decision for tonight's game. Your other top six line is O'Reilly, Perron, and Sanford as well. Pietrangelo with that hand injury lands on the IR, and they say he may need surgery, going to be reevaluated at Christmas. It was a little bit vague whether they were going to sort of give him time to heal and reevaluate him at Christmas and then decide on the surgery, or whether they're going to be deciding on surgery in the next week or two and just hope he's going to be and then reevaluate it at Christmas and see where the hand stands there. So keep that in mind. Also for the St. Louis Blues, for Bree, never, that guy's never injured at all. But shoulder injury lands him on the IR. He is also going to be reevaluated at Christmas as well. No surprise. Well, I'm not that no surprise, but a little bit. Maybe a minor surprise, not that much. But anyway, in Toronto, Nylander, excuse me, first game back, right where he's always been, on the right wing with Matthews and Marleau. So no sort of warming up and starting him on the third or fourth line and working him up into the lineup. He gets right back into the top six with Matthews. In Vancouver, Barchi with a concussion. Still no timetable, but he did go see a concussion specialist in Chicago last week and has reported feeling much better ever since. So obviously things are finally starting to trend well, as he does have good chemistry with Horvat on that top line. Shake up those lines a little bit in Vancouver, too. Recently acquired Levo, playing with Peterson and Boeser, and Goldeboom moved to play with Horvat and Virtanen, and that's your top six for the Vancouver Canucks. In Washington, looks like Burkovsky is going to be given the first opportunity to play with Backstrom and Ovechkin, with Tom Wilson out with that upper body injury that we believe is a concussion but not officially confirmed just yet. Listed as day-to-day, I would expect Tom Wilson to be out at least a week, but we're still waiting for information, more specific information on him as well. And then finally, in Winnipeg, some activations off the IR. Dustin Byfuglien and Kulikov both activated off the IR to compensate for that. They end up moving Kopp onto the IR, and they also mentioned that Morrissey, who did miss their last game, is listed day-to-day with a lower body injury, unlikely to be back for their next game, but Coach Maurice did say that it doesn't expect to be too much longer. He's very close to returning, so it's probably just one more game that he is out for the Jets. All right, George, let's turn our attention to the goalie report and try to get this in as we are starting to run a little bit long. So, George, what's the latest when it comes to goalies? There's been an awful lot of movement in terms of new starters, old starters coming back. We've obviously talked about this a lot in the last couple of weeks. Is there any new revelations between the pipes around the NHL that are particularly important for fans and fantasy owners to hear? George?
All right, the goaltenders. I guess our new injury is Carter Hutton. He's day-to-day with an upper body injury here. They don't expect it to be long-term here, but we do know that Linus Ullmark is going to start tomorrow, and Scott Wedgwood was called up from the AHL. So Carter Hutton won't be starting this weekend. They don't expect it to be long-term, however, but there is some sort of problem there. Edmonton, Talbot's going to start tonight. Koskinen's going to start on Sunday. This may be back to being a timeshare now, where you're going to have to wait and see which one outplays the other. Koskinen hasn't really done anything poorly, but Talbot did have one good start against the Blues the other night. So perhaps, once again, this is what the problem is when you have a starting goaltender. They hesitate to go away from him, even if the backup is better. And I think that's what you're seeing here. Talbot had one good start, so he's getting another chance. But Koskinen's had 10 good starts, but yet that's still not enough to prove that he should have the job. Carolina, McIlhenny left practice early yesterday, so he has an issue. We don't know exactly what that issue is yet. They called up, oh boy, Alex Nedeljkovic, something like that. Let's call him Alex N. He was recalled. Peter Mrazek, I expect you're going to see him in net. So they have, once again, they have issues there as well. They have not said what the injury is, how long his prognosis is, or just day to day. So McIlhenny out, Mrazek in. Luongo, we saw he returned earlier this week. Yippee-yay. So he can get him back in your lineup. They had one good start, one okay start at best. The Islanders, Robin Leonard, who I guess you would call the backup to Tomas Greece, even though he's really, if Greece is goaltender 1, then Leonard's really goaltender 1B. I wouldn't call him 1A, but 1B. So, but he's out. Once again, they have he tweaked something. It's not going to be long term. The Islanders did not put him on IR. Christopher Gibson was recalled, but I don't think he's going to see a start there. At least I don't expect him to. And there was also some news here this week that the Islanders were hoping to get Sorokin out of his contract with the KHL. Not happening. His agent pretty much said he won't be leaving the KHL until at least after his contract ends, which is after next season, not even this season. So the Islanders still have problems in net finding a future franchise goaltender. Arizona, stop me if you heard this before. Rant is on the IR. Lower body injury there. Once again, not a surprise. They brought him back too early. I made fun of it. I believe it was about Monday's show or the show before that when they said they were going to bring him back even though they weren't sure. It made no sense to me. If you're not sure he's healthy, why the hell are you taking him off the IR? That made no sense. He started that night, and sure enough, he got hurt. Aiden Hill has played very well in his place, so you may be okay there. Anyway, Darcy Kemper did return to practice on Wednesday, so he may be well with the backup sooner rather than later. Tampa Bay, Vasilevsky, still weeks away. So that 4 to 6 week timetable looks like it's going to be closer to the 6 weeks than the four. And by that, I mean that I expect it now to go past the 6 week mark. I don't think he's returning until after the calendar year. So after New Year's or the holidays, that's when I think you'll see Vasilevsky back in a Tampa Bay uniform there. Dominguez played okay. I said the ratios aren't great, but the W's are there. Once again, my Tampa's the best team in hockey. Florida, I already mentioned, Luongo's back. Hudson was sent down to the AHL. Reimer's the backup there. And that's all I have for you. So it's really not that bad unless you're if you're a Hutton owner, if you're a Rant owner. And really, if those injuries are really hurting your fantasy team, you probably didn't draft so well.
All right, George, I think that might be an understatement there. Although Hutton's, sort of been, surprisingly good, say overall, especially considering the expectations. But still, I think your point is well made. All right, George, the follow-up question I always ask you, looking for recommendations for fantasy owners in daily lineup leagues for this weekend. 11 teams have two games this weekend. Only six of them are in back-to-back situations. I only mention that because the back-to-back situations always usually facilitate a backup goalie start. So what low-owned number one goalies that might be available for owners might recommend, or obviously those backups that you think might have a good start and might be able to get some good statistics for their fantasy owners, would you recommend for this weekend? George?
Yeah, so I don't think we have great options this weekend. I don't. Anaheim, they're one of those teams, but they don't have back-to-back. And really, I don't know if you want Miller or Gibson right now. That team is so shorthanded. There's a million shots going against each goaltender. To get a win there, the goaltender has to play, literally outstanding. Halak is certainly an option. Boston plays Toronto and Ottawa. Obviously, we'd like Halak to get the Ottawa start and not the Toronto start, but we don't know that as of yet. I would assume that Rask goes against Toronto, and once again, we get that Halak start there, but we'll wait to see that. Calgary, once again, you should already have Rittich on your team, and I'm assuming you do. And here's another problem. I mentioned with Edmonton, we're seeing now the same thing with Calgary. Rittich has outplayed Mike Smith badly. But Mike Smith had one good start a couple of games back, now had a shutout the other night. He might be in the process of taking that starting job back. It's just so hard to pry the starter loose on some of these teams here. But either way, Rittich is going to get a start this weekend. And, they're playing Nashville and at Edmonton. Neither one's great as far as the goaltender is concerned, but you're hoping to get one of those two starts there. On down the list, Dallas. We know Bishop's going to start tonight against San Jose. He could very well start Sunday against Vegas as well, so hard to recommend that. I already told you about about Edmonton. Talbot gets Minnesota tonight. Koskinen gets Calgary on Sunday. Let's face it, neither one's great here. I prefer Talbot. If he's on your waiver wire and you need somebody, Minnesota played last night. We already mentioned that game. That ended up being a nightmare there. So you get him on second half of back-to-back nights, so that could be a bonus there. Although Dubnyk will be starting for Minnesota as Stalock started last night, so one thing to keep in mind there if you're looking for a benefit in goal. Ottawa, I think with the pass on Ottawa. Philadelphia, we're not going to touch them. San Jose, certainly like Aaron Dell this weekend. Hard not to like Dell. I expect Martin Jones to go against Dallas tonight, which gives Dell against Arizona tomorrow, and we certainly like that. Even on back-to-back nights, we still like that. So that could be a bonus for you there. St. Louis, Winnipeg tonight, Vancouver on Sunday. I still don't think we're going for the backup there for the Blues. It's not a situation I would trust. Same thing with the Vegas Golden Knights, and they play the Kings. I think Fleury gets the Kings. Subban gets Dallas, and I'm going to pass on that. Winnipeg, same situation. Do you trust Brassard against either St. Louis or Philadelphia? I really don't. So I think it's a little thin. Outside of the goalies you should already have, the Rittiches and the Koskinens, those guys should already be Clint Grubauer. Those guys should already be on rosters. As for guys who are not, it's Halak, Dell, and if you need somebody more longer term, Aiden Hill for Arizona, he's played so well. Really he's played well. I know he lost last night to Copley in the Washington Capitals, but he's played well. And he's a goalie who maybe you get more than one game out of. Not this week. They only play San Jose tomorrow. But if you're looking for a goaltender for next week, first couple of games, we don't know when Rant is coming back. Yeah, so Aiden Hill could be someone you're picking up more long-term than just for this weekend.
All right, George. You're right. That does seem pretty skimpy, especially with all those, guys like Coulson and Richard you've sort of been keying on last, like 3-4 shows. Those guys probably are taken, especially in more competitive or deeper leagues. It does look like a pretty thin weekend, although the Dell and Hill recommendations, to me at least, look like they have particularly good potential there. So thank you, as always, George. I'll let you go as I wrap things up, and we'll talk to you on Monday's show, looking at the skater options for this weekend. if you're looking for the volume, you're looking for, again, a couple of games this weekend, looking at those teams that George just talked all about, and wants to jump out at me as having a particularly good offensive potential would be the Boston Bruins, despite the fact that they really have not been scoring much outside of Pastrnak and Marchand. Still, you're playing Toronto and Ottawa, two weak teams defensively. If I'm sort of really in the need and I'm in a deeper league, I'm still going to look and maybe take a chance on maybe either DeBrusk or Krejci, probably Krejci more than DeBrusk, since DeBrusk really hasn't done anything the last five or six games in particular. San Jose playing Dallas and Arizona, not the easiest schedule, but also not the hardest schedule, and also San Jose last couple of days looks like they're starting to really figure it out since they've been very up and down so far this season. And easily my biggest recommendation would be Winnipeg playing St. Louis and Philadelphia. You get the Friday and the Sunday starts for your players. Obviously, Saturday in daily leagues is going to be usually completely filled up, so you sort of like that better. And plus those matchups, playing a St. Louis team that's having trouble stopping the puck and a Philadelphia team that's having trouble doing pretty much everything, but particularly stopping the puck. If you're looking for one-offs for tonight, Winnipeg against St. Louis would certainly be the one that jumps out at me most. San Jose against Dallas also as well. If you are looking to fill a hole on Saturday, that Pittsburgh-Ottawa game for either of those teams has some potential for a good pickup. And then on Sunday, St. Louis at home versus Vancouver and Winnipeg at home versus Philadelphia are also particularly intriguing in terms of specific player recommendations. You know, it's pretty thin. You know, looking at the Winnipeg Jets because, you know, they're top five guys pretty much everybody owns in terms of Wheeler, Shifley, Ehlers, Connor, and Laine. Little hasn't been doing too much, but I'm looking at Perrault, the Winnipeg center, left wing, and right wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo leagues, only 2% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo. For the last seven games, he does have five assists, one of those assists on the power play, getting a hit per game. And like I said, I like the schedule, so if you're in a deeper league, Perrault has some potential for you as well. A player that I was surprised that ownership was as low as it was, scraping the ceiling of where I'm going to consider recommending you. You've pretty much got to be available at least 35 to 40% of leagues on average for me to recommend you. Sean Couturier, the Philadelphia center, only 61% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues. In the last 11 games, 5 goals, 8 assists, a power play point, averaging just shy of 3 shots on goal per game, which is definitely an average you're looking for playing Buffalo and Winnipeg this weekend. And even bleeding into next week, Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver. Again, schedule for all those 5 games, whether you're looking for this weekend or looking for the next week and a half, as I just sort of laid it out for you. And I'm not sort of brimming with confidence with that schedule, especially since Calgary and Edmonton seem to be coming around particularly defensively as of late. Winnipeg seems to be finding their stride as well, but it's still hot player, one of the few players outside of Giroux who's actually been producing lately. Too good to ignore as far as I'm concerned. Another pretty highly owned scraping the ceiling of the ownership for recommendation player, Hurdle for the San Jose Sharks. Also center, left wing, and right wing eligible in Yahoo leagues, 59% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo. Last 4 games, 2 goals, both of those on the power play. And I know that's not all that impressive as well as his last 8 games overall, but he does have 19 points in 24 games overall, and recently he's come back from injury, playing a line with Couturier and Pavelski. And he's got that decent schedule this weekend with Dallas and Arizona. Even bleeding into next week, New Jersey, Dallas, and Chicago has some appeal as well. And then finally, if you're looking to make a little bit of a risky move and you do need a center, Colby Cave of the Boston Bruins, the center's 0% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues for good reasons, but he does have 2 assists in the last 3 games playing on a top line between Marchand and Pastrnak. You're playing Toronto and Ottawa this weekend, and that schedule is pretty tempting. So if you have a need, you want to take a chance, he's also somebody I'd take a look at. All right, folks, that's all that we have for today. Hope we answered all your important hockey questions. We'll be here for you every Monday, every Friday at 2 o'clock, even though I know most of you listen to us later on and not live. Either way, have a good hockey weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.